And our next presentation will be on the impact of ultraviolet B light on turfgrass pigmentation and physiology. Presenting will be Edward Nangle with David Gardner, Carl Danneberger, James Metzger, and Luis Rodriguez Sona. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Costa. Afternoon, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the warm weather in San Antonio. We've all had a nice lunch. I'm going to talk to you today about ultraviolet light. It's something we've been working at for a while here, our open OSU. Obviously, the Shamrock is to remind you that I come from Ireland, not from OSU directly. What we've seen is that there's three main regions in the ultraviolet area. We've got the UVA, we've got the UVB, and UVC. My little artwork there indicates that the UVA is a longer wavelength, UVB is a slightly shorter wavelength, and then the UVC, obviously the shortest wavelength. The energy associated with those three regions is also different. UVA can be considered to have a lower energy level with it versus UVB and UVC. The influences, we see that there's an inhibition of photosynthetic activity with a range of issues due to the ultraviolet light, whether it's degradation of chlorophyll pigments in a range of plants or production of highly energized radicals that are causing cell breakdown internally, along with a general loss of quality in plants. This is something that's been tested in a range of materials, range of plants, and people are kind of fairly well agreed on that. Plant responses vary. Dr. Irvin in Virginia Tech worked on some Kentucky bluegrass, and he indicated there was antioxidant compounds such as photolyase or superoxide dismutase. So they acted in a different way. They either quenched the problem, such as the charged radicals, or they actually did some repair work, such as what the photolyase does. You may get some variation in leaf surfaces, so we get the hairs on the leaf in an effort to reflect or deflect some of the light. We may also get some thickness changes in leaf thickness or epidermal thickness to absorb more of the light in the leaf surface. We also get some change in absorption characteristics. So there's a discussion in relation to compounds which you may have heard talked about called anthocyanins. You will see that red colour. We see that in a range of situations. The anthocyanins will sit in the epidermis. If they are fully isolated with a sugar attached, they have the capability to absorb ultraviolet light. They can also, as we see the red colour, obviously they reflect the red into our eyesight. The other thing then, alteration of leaf morphology. A plant at 90 degrees to the sunlight is attenuating a lot more light. A plant at 45 degrees on its leaf surface is not attenuating as much light directly onto the leaf surface. Plants can change to adapt to this. For us in turfgrass, the issue basically is there's a kind of a constant change in ultraviolet levels. If anyone was reading Science or Nature, I think about 4 weeks ago, they published a paper indicating that there's now a 40 square kilometre hole in the Arctic. That's the first time there's been a hole in the ozone layer in the Arctic. Normally the problem has been noticed down in the southern hemisphere. So the changes are occurring. There has been a decrease, small, over the last 20 years in continental US, but this is more of a global issue. Places like New Zealand, they actually have to change their window curtains every 2 years because of bleaching of the colorants in the material. So with that, we should probably start thinking about changes and how we can counteract any potential problems and developing the information base that we have on turfgrass responses. As I said, Dr. Irvin has done probably the most work. He worked with Kentucky bluegrass sod. And from our perspective, we wanted to add to the information within the cool season area. So with that, we had objectives of investigating changes in turfgrass quality, photosynthetic productivity, and some pigment changes in response to UV exposure in three cool season grasses. We also wanted to see if there was some specific responses that we could find within the various grasses in the a chance that there would be higher chances or higher levels of UVB light. We hypothesized a couple of things. We thought that plants will be capable of producing and concentrating compounds based on where they're attenuating light. We'll discuss that a little bit later, but the ability of the plant to move the material around its in location so that where the main or the majority of the light is actually hitting the surface, that's where we would expect we would have found the greatest concentration of UV-absorbing compounds and maybe antioxidant activity. The turf grass plants, we hypothesized that they had a higher concentration of the UV absorbing compounds. They should be also able, we think, or we thought, to tolerate the higher levels of ultraviolet light. So, materials and methods. We had grow chambers set up, we had control versus UV. As you can see, the light intensity was about 26 moles per day. Not quite the full daylight, but as many of you may know, it's tough in a grow chamber to get full daylight intensity in a grow chamber. It still causes problems. We had three grasses. We had tall fescue, perennial ryegrass, and creeping bentgrass. The UVB, we ran it for 3 hours a day. The reason I didn't put 24 kilojoules per day was we just ran it for the 3 hours. 8.1 kilojoules per meter squared per hour was our UVB. We also had some UVA in both chambers, predominantly due to the fact that we had the incandescent lights on in the chambers as well. For the pigment stress, we ran that over a 1, 3, 5, 7 day response. And then we looked at a longer period to measure changes in the photosynthetic activity. First thing, before I get you all confused, as you go through the charts, what we have is top 5 centimetres, top and roots. It was the simplest way to do it. I hope this picture helps to indicate what I'm talking about. So when we say the top 5, that's right at the top. There was no shading and inadvertent protection of the plant. When we go into the top, it's obviously a lot more denser in there, some shading. You may expect that there will be some changes with that between that and the top 5. And then the roots, they don't see any light. So that being the case, there should be very limited response. Pigment analysis, the first thing we did do, obviously fluorescence has become a common measurement. We turned the chambers off, left them for an hour in the dark, and then we analysed fluorescence. We also did chlorophyll measurements, so we measured 40 square millimetres, put it in dimethylformamide, and ran that through UV-Vis spectrophotometry. We also carried out the flavonoids and total phenols, and I'm predominantly going to talk about those parts for the pigments. The anthocyanins and carotenoids we're still working on, so I'm not going to present stuff that I'm not 100% sure on how we're getting on with that. But you can see that nice picture where we had the red separation with the anthocyanins on top. Quality analysis then over the extended trials. We had a colour ranking. We did biomass production and tillering response over 1 to 3, 2, 3, 4 week periods. Everything was set up in a randomised block design with 3 reps per light environment. We had 4 subsamples per rep, with the exception of the biomass, where we had 9 subsamples, just to try and take out some of the variability. Didn't quite work as we wanted, but it still got there. We analysed with PROC GLM. So, results. On your y-axis, we've got chlorophyll, milligrams per metre squared. And on your x-axis, we've got the days. So you can see immediately, we've got the blue line, which is the control, and then we've got the ultraviolet light. Many of the grasses started to separate out pretty quickly. We've got the 2 bentgrasses where they both suffered what we would describe as a shock being changed into the light environment and the control environment as well. So there was a decrease there. However, once you got into day 3, day 5 and day 7, we saw that difference between the UV and the control environment. So there was degradation of chlorophyll across all the grasses after that period. Into fluorescence, we had the FVFM on the y-axis, so our variable over maximal fluorescence measurements in the day. And again, only the tall fescue lasted till about day 3, where we didn't have any separation really, but the rest of the grasses started to separate pretty quickly, with differences across all of them after day 3. You can see, and this occurred in both the flavonoids, the chlorophyll, everything started to level out between day 5 and day 7, so the actual impact may actually stay at that stage. Between day 5 and day 7 is seemingly where the grasses find their level with the problem. And so we ran that until day 7. You can see, again, the UV on the bottom in the blue separated from the control in the red. So, just to confuse you some more, the phenolics, we talked about how we divided out the top 5 and the top and the control and the root. So what we want to look at here is first on the y-axis, we've got the gallic acid equivalents. We've got our day. What we also have is the control is in red, and we have the UV in blue. The control with the circular data point and the large dash is the top 5, and so you can see that the top 5 in the control is higher than the phenolics in the top 5 in the UV, while in control versus UV in general, we had that separation. The other thing you'll notice, whether it was in control or UV, the material with the top 5 had greater quantities of phenolics. This also occurred in flavonoids. The plant obviously is being able to move the material or the compounds that are important in that situation into where the most of the light is hitting the plant surface. Again, with the roots, we saw a very limited response in both environments. When we talk about flavonoids, we've got quercetin equivalents on the y-axis, on the x-axis we've got our days. We can see an initial response across both environments in the first day, so we have a jump as there was a protective type response. UV, or the flavonoids do have a UV absorbing capability, and obviously then they were in that same mode with the control environment trying to protect from light damage in general. We can then see, however, that the response had a trend of ultraviolet light being a higher level of flavonoids versus the control. But again, once we got to that 5-7 day period, everything started to level out. When we got into biomass, we did this over a much more extended period. Now, I'll say that the root and shoot material and the tillering had a very similar response. What we've got on our right side is the grasses going down from tall fescue all the way to your pencross. Across the top, we've got our week zero all the way to week four, and then we've got root and shoot, and then we've separated out each one. So after week zero, we had no differences with the exception of perennial ryegrass. The Irish can't grow everything perfectly. When we get into week one, we still didn't see any differences, with the exception of the shoot in the tall fescue, where we started to see inhibition of shoot production in the tall fescue. Didn't see any changes with the other three grasses. Once we started getting into week two, we saw some more changes. The tall fescue, in particular with the root and shoot, started to be inhibited to a greater extent, while the other tree grasses didn't show any differences. When we got into week three, then we started to see a much greater difference across all the grasses. Both the roots and shoots were inhibited in the ultraviolet conditions. And that continued into week four. We saw the same, as I said, in the tillering. About week three, we saw that separation. In the colour, we saw a change after about week one. The UV stuff started to lose its colour a little bit quicker. And obviously, as we saw the 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7 day response on the chlorophyll, we did see that difference there as well when we did colour measurements. So in conclusion, we saw a breakdown of the flavonoids after about 3 days. We did see that levelling off with the chlorophyll and the flavonoids and the phenolics after about 7 days. As we saw with the biomass there, we had inhibition due to damage from the light. The rapid build-up, as I said, with the flavonoids was decreased, and that coincided with the chlorophyll breakdown, so they weren't offering as much protection as we were expecting. The other thing which I think was very interesting was the fact that the plants displayed variation within the plant itself as far as light attenuation. So there was a greater concentration of these materials at the top of the plant. All right, I'd like to thank Dr. Gardner, Dr. Annenberger, Dr. Metzger, and Dr. Siona, Dominic and Phil, and Dr. Justy, Graham, and Opio. Any questions, people, folks? Yes, sir.
Since you didn't show any pictures of the damage, can you kind of describe the type of damage you were seeing on the
roof? We had a yellowing, but we also had, in certain instances, nearly a burn effect. There was some lesions, dark lesions, as if the plant material had been burned. Now, very small lesions, but not an overall. It was more yellowing than anything else was what we saw. Yes, that was awesome.
So if the flavonoids and phenolics are not, you know, at least in the study playing a big role, do you have any other compounds that you think you might want to look at in subsequent studies that might contribute to protection?
I'm going to do something dangerous. We have started working on anthocyanins. Now, I talked to you already about their capacity. There is a bit of argument about what they can and can't do. We've been working with the mass spec and the HPLC. So just a sample of what we've found, you can see this 311 nanometer absorbance on the picture on the right hand side as you look on top. That's where we're interested in that pigment. The problem is, you see where 513 nanometers is, we've got a very small concentration of the anthocyanin. So we've been playing with the method. As of right now, the anthocyanins will offer that UV characteristic. And as long as I say they have the sugar attached or they're acylated, we can get that UV characteristic otherwise they may not offer, because traditionally anthocyanins absorb light only in the 520 nanometer range. So when we see that red color, we know that they've become acidified and they have that characteristic added to them. Did we see a red color in the plants when they were in the environment? Yes, it varied between day zero and day seven. That picture that, if anyone noticed, I'll be just as cheeky. Right on the top layer there, if you can see that separation, is a nice red color. Kind of nice and cool when you see it separating out. Chloroform acetone. This is UV-treated tall fescue after 7 days. If I did it after 1 day, that stayed white. So there is a variation there that we're interested in. How much of a benefit they provide, we don't know yet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.